Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the February 2010 issue of Good Housekeeping magazine. Our first article is from the family section. It's called The Friendship Factor by Charlotte Latvala. In sixth grade, my daughter Maddie was inseparable from her best friend. I'll call her Emma. They did everything together, biked around town, made silly movies with our camcorder, and had frequent sleepovers. Then one day, about mid-October of seventh grade, I realized I haven't seen or heard about Emma for weeks. "What's new with Emma?" I ventured. Big pause, a sigh, a frown. "She switched lunch tables," said my daughter, finally with a catch in her voice. "She's hanging out with the girls on her basketball team." For a couple of weeks after our conversation, Maddie drifted in and out of blue moods. She moped around and hid in her Harry Potter books, her mental comfort food, and perhaps, not coincidentally, the story of three loyal friends. I kept having nagging flashbacks to my freshman year of high school when I ditched my longtime best friend for new pals on the track team. I know, I'm cringing as I write this. I tiptoed gently around the subject, but my concerns mounted. What if Maddie's funk got more serious? What if she didn't make another close friend all year? What if this turned out to be the first in a series of traumatic middle school events? As it turned out, my fears were unfounded. In fact, my daughter bounced back within weeks. She joined a local theater group, and soon new friends and interests filled her days. She rarely mentioned her former pal and went back to being her cheerful self. Still, I was left with a nagging feeling I should have been more helpful during her friendship crisis. Sudden rifts are part and parcel of the tween and early teen years, says Elizabeth Hartley Brewer, author of Making Friends, A Guide to Understanding and Nurturing Your Child's Friendships. This time is when kids are figuring out who they will be as adults, she says. They're separating emotionally from their families, identifying more with other kids. They often change friends until they find a good fit. Mix in raging hormones, mean girl drama or tough guy bullying, and limited social skills, no wonder friendships often fizzle at this age. But as parents, do we watch helplessly, or do we let our mama bear instincts take over? While there's no single rule on this, when to step in, know this, it's your kid's problem, not yours. The ups and downs of friendships are rehearsals for adult intimacy, loyalty, and commitment. If you interfere too much, you will rob kids of these lessons. But that doesn't mean you step out of the picture completely. Here's how to coach your kids through friendship crisis. When your kids get dumped, do get the conversation started. While you shouldn't micromanage your child's social life, remember that you are still her emotional anchor, so get a dialogue going. By walking on eggshells around Maddie during her friendship crisis, I wasn't as supportive as I could have been. Kids want to tell their stories and feel safe doing so. So stay approachable and let her know you're in the listening mode. For some kids, that means saying, "Hey, if you want to go to Starbucks, I'm around today." Others may need a little cajoling to open up. Some hints: use open-ended questions, ones that can't be answered with a yes or no. "I wonder why John acted that way." Validate their emotions. "It must feel awful when Ann is so mean to you." Avoid criticizing or giving advice while your kid is telling the story. Saying, "Wouldn't it have been better if you," will shut down the talking. Save your pearls of wisdom for later. Help your child gain perspective. In general, the younger the child, the more coaching she'll need. Consider the case of Melissa, a mom from New York. "My 9-year-old was being teased by a, quote, friend, but she felt a strong sense of loyalty to this girl. I sat down with my daughter, and we spoke about how true friends should treat one another. In time, my daughter realized that the mouthy girl wasn't a good pal. If, however, you suspect your child's behavior led to the rift, you've noticed they're clingy or rude, let him know gently. Applaud his positive intentions in making friends, but spell out that his actions aren't helping him achieve the goal. Maybe your child tries to make friends by being funny, but winds up pushing kids away with cutting comments. Help him recognize that and talk about alternative strategies instead of telling jokes. Cast a wider net. One thing I did do right with Maddie, encouraging my daughter to join a theater group and meet new people. Another circle of friends provides a fresh start and a place to turn when things at school aren't working out. It also helps kids understand that not everybody has to be your BFF, a point worth mentioning to your kid. School friends tend to be very tight with the same history. Sometimes it's healthy for kids to be in a more diverse group. She recently encouraged her 13-year-old twin sons to join a community soccer club outside of their town. Now when they struggle with the friendship at school, I suggest they call one of their soccer pals. Strike the phrase best friend from your vocabulary. It sets up unrealistic expectations for everyone. The seemingly deep bond that kids form in elementary school often fall by the wayside in tween years, and kids need to be assured that that is normal and healthy to have friendships of varying intensity. The notion of a lifelong best friend comes from movies and books. It actually is very rare in real life. Don't downplay the hurt. The experts agree, don't minimize kids' feelings. Don't say, "Oh, don't worry, you'll make other friends." Instead, try a simple acknowledgement of what they're going through. "This must be tough for you, and I'm so sorry. I wish I could make the hurt go away." Bad mouth the other kid? Comments like, "Haley used to be so loud, you're better off without her," are best kept to yourself. Kids pick up, drop, and pick up friends again. You don't want your words coming back to haunt you. Call the other parents? Some years ago, my friend, I'll call her Sue, got involved in a tiff between her tween son and a neighborhood friend. She contacted the other parent in an attempt to smooth things over, only to have the mom recite a lengthy list of complaints about Sue's son. Getting involved with the other family is a minefield. Avoid it. Parents are naturally protective of their kids and rarely accept blame. It's also vital, she says, that kids sort things out for themselves. If adults step in, it's a lost learning opportunity, and you're implying that your kid can't handle himself. Now, when your kid does the dumping, do offer guidance. Encourage him to end a friendship that's run its course in the least painful way. Rehearse with him how to explain it to the other kid using role play if necessary. Coach him to use I statements that are less likely to provoke an angry response than you remarks. Your child could say, "I've enjoyed our time together, but I have other interests now." Share your war stories. Learning how to be a friend is like learning anything else. Kids need role models. Stories from your past help children realize that all friendships aren't perfect. Don't be afraid to talk about the difference between healthy and toxic relationships. And help her notice that while you have a few very close friends, you have other casual friends, like your book club pals. Don't let your own feelings rule. Remember that you can't dictate your child's pals. In fifth grade, my daughter Addie drifted away from her long-standing best friend. It was painful to me because I really liked the girl. Robbins kept asking Addie to invite the friend over until one day she shouted, "No, and stop asking me." I finally realized that I just couldn't force the friendship. In truth, it's best to keep feelings of loss to yourself. If you're overly sad, your child may feel confused and guilty when it's serious. There's one time, however, when you absolutely need to intervene. If you're concerned for your kid's physical or mental safety. Campbell worked with a couple whose 13-year-old son was having trouble sleeping. With a little prodding, they found out that a former friend not only had dropped their son, but was also encouraging others to bully him at school. Fortunately, the situation was resolved when the parents contacted the school. If it's not an in-school issue, don't automatically call the other parents. Regardless of where the problem happens, a guidance counselor is a good first resource. The school will tell you what they can and cannot do to help and can make very good suggestions. Other options include pediatricians, ministers, rabbis, or therapists. Signs that sadness is sprawling out of control include anxiety, a drop in grades, a child's avoiding school, and in extreme cases, suicide or homicidal thoughts. Loss of interest in his passions, soccer, video games, is another red flag that this is a blue moon that has dragged on too long. A normal conflict blows over in a few weeks. If the problem persists longer than that, you may need to seek outside help. Handling the evil friend. What would you do if your tween or teen became friends with a kid who was rude, was a regular patron of racy movies, or looked so scruffy you wouldn't be surprised if a can of beer or worse came falling out of his backpack? Surprisingly, you shouldn't issue a ban unless you are sure the child has been in trouble with school or local authorities. If you forbid contact, says parenting expert Bob Michelle Borbora, you end up in a power struggle, and your child may rebel and end up closer to this kid. Instead, here's a three-step approach. First, give the friend a chance. Find out what the attraction is. Try, you guys seem to get along. Why do you think that is? Or, he's not like your other pals. Tell me what you know about him. Step two, cite your concerns. Be specific and share what you know. Whether it's he plays too many mature rated games, or I heard his house isn't supervised. A solution? Let them hang out at your house under your watch. The third and final suggestion? If you're certain this pal is a bad influence, pull the plug. Say, we've tried the other approach, but your safety is now at stake. You can no longer see this kid, and tell the reasons why. Our next article is entitled Family Secrets, A Therapist's Guide to Revealing and Healing by Evan Ember Black. Joan and Mike came for their first family therapy session with their obviously unhappy 16-year-old son Kyle and his younger brother Jared. Kyle's in trouble again, his father told me wearily. We just don't understand, Joan said. Most of the time, he's a great kid. He plays sports, gets good grades, has friends. But every year, a couple of months after school starts, he turns into someone else. We just hang on until after Thanksgiving, when Kyle is his regular self again. Kyle slumped further and further in his chair, pulling his jacket over his head, when Jared chimed in to describe how his brother had destroyed his favorite video game. I was intrigued by the pattern. Every November, Kyle became the family monster, and each year his behavior worsened. This time, he stole a teacher's wallet and come home drunk on several nights. Joan expressed fury one minute and seemed to defend her son the next. Well, all teenagers drink, don't they? Shaking his head at his mother's mixed message, Kyle broke his silence for the first time. I can feel confused when my mother does that, he said, but that's nothing new. When I tried to find out more about the family's relationships in general, beyond the immediate problem, and about each parent's family of origin, Joan and Mike courteously stonewalled, quickly refocusing the attention on Kyle. And when I asked whether anything else important to that family had happened in November, they insisted there was nothing. As a family therapist for 35 years, I've learned when a child exhibits troubling behavior at around the same time every year, it's often tied to an unmentionable anniversary. And frequent uncomfortable silences, along with swift changes, or signs that a secret is being kept. What would I discover, I wondered, if I saw Joan and Mike without the boys? When the three of us met, I gently asked the couple, "Is there anything you can tell me about your family's history that might help us to help Kyle?" With much hesitation, Joan finally responded. "Mike isn't Kyle's dad," she said. "He's Jared's dad. Kyle's father, Alan, died in a car accident when Kyle was a baby. It was an icy November night, and Alan was drunk. 10 months later, Joan met and married Mike, a responsible and successful man who adopted Kyle immediately. The central secret was born when Joan's new husband, her parents, and her friends persuaded her not to tell Kyle that Mike wasn't his biological father. Alan's parents cut themselves off from Joan and Kyle, but they lived nearby, and Joan told me she was terrified they'd turn up one day. Other family members and friends knew the truth, including cousins of Kyle's age. The chances were great that Kyle would discover this secret in an unplanned way. As I worked with Joan and Mike, I learned that the secret of Kyle's paternity was intricately connected to other secrets, as so often happens in families. Joan's parents had forbidden her to date Alan because of his wild ways, but the two teenagers had sneaked out anyway. When Joan became pregnant with Kyle, both sets of parents heaped shame on her. Alan and Joan married at a city hall with no family presence, and soon afterward, Alan was killed. "I've never talked about this to anyone, not even Mike," Joan said, weeping. "But every November, I just get so sad." Mike nodded. "I've noticed, but I was afraid to say anything." Here was the link to Kyle's behavior. No doubt he also noticed his mother's annual sorrow. And since most kids prefer a mad mom to a sad mom, he went into high gear to distract her. He began working on plans to tell the secret to both boys. How secrets happen. Every family keeps secrets, usually about things they consider shameful. A successful businessman loses his job and pretends to his family that he's still working. A brother and a sister won't let their school friends visit, afraid their mom will be passed out drunk on the couch. If you have a secret of your own, you know that often they created with the best of intentions, the desire to protect ourselves or others. But maintaining them requires lies, and they get in the way of clear and meaningful communication. Problem solving becomes impossible when crucial subjects can't be discussed. Family conversations become stilted. Fear replaces ease. Those privy to secrets become uncomfortably bound to one another, while those outside feel excluded, and they may not know why. Distinguishing toxic secrecy from healthy privacy can be confusing. Here are the differences. Secrets involve shame, while private matters do not. Secrecy makes us anxious, unhappy, while privacy does not. When we're denied information, we have the right to know. We're in the realm of secrecy, not privacy. Kyle, for example, had the right to know who his biological father was. His mother was being secretive, not private. When our ability to understand our relationships and make informed decisions is handicapped, then secrecy, not privacy, is in play. A child born from donor insemination has a right to know his history. Your infertility treatments, however, are private and not the business of your neighbors. I counsel people who are considering opening up a secret to think about not just risks, but potential benefits. Imagine yourself with the family members and dear friends after you have shared what has been hidden. Let yourself see the positive changes that are likely. Anxiety vanishing, shame lifting, authenticity and trust returning to your relationships. One of my clients was a woman who was for 26 years had hidden her history of sexual abuse by a family member. She divulged this secret first to me. Slowly, she considered who else in her family she wanted to tell. When she shared her story with her two sisters, they too had been abused. Though it was painful at first, this new honesty brought them closer than they ever had been. "Now I feel light," she told me after the revelation. "The shame I carried all these years flew out your window." If you're thinking about getting something off your chest, remember that the deeper relationship issues embedded in a secret won't be resolved instantly. Introducing new information may rock everyone involved, and a new equilibrium must be negotiated. When Sam told his wife Ella that he had been having an internet affair, he assumed there'd be no need for further discussion. I told her and I stopped. Why do we have to keep talking about this? Sam wanted to know in our therapy session. Ella, on the other hand, was questioning his loyalty and trustworthiness, the very bedrock of their marriage. I was able to help Sam see that simply announcing to Ella that the online relationship was over didn't address what his actions had meant to both of them. Over time, the couple acknowledged a deeper emotional secret of distance and loneliness that preceded Sam's internet affair. Each had been afraid to express feelings of emptiness, but until they did, they couldn't rebuild a relationship in which they felt connected. Telling the secret was the first step in the healing process. That called for time, patience, and a willingness to change. Opening secrets successfully requires an atmosphere of empathy and acceptance. And since not every family has these qualities in abundance, if you're considering telling a secret, you might think about how best to enhance them. You could start by rehearsing the revelation with a family member or a therapist. Think who's likely to be supportive. You may, for instance, decide that you want to tell your sister to gain an ally before you tell your mother. You might invite a trusted member of the clergy to serve as a witness or a guide and to help create a receptive environment wherein thoughtful telling and carefully listening are possible. Timing is important when you're uncovering what's long been hidden. Children especially need to adjust to life-changing information. When Joan and Mike finally told Kyle about his birth father, they did it during school break. Predictably, he was angry at first. Joan explained how her own parents had counseled her not to tell, and that she believed she was protecting him. She told Kyle how Alan had died, and how much it frightened her to see Kyle drinking now. But she also talked about why she loved Alan and shared wonderful stories about him. She gave Kyle adventure books and a backpack that had belonged to his father, things that even Mike didn't know she had kept. I always knew I would pass them on to Kyle someday, Joan said. Soon Joan and Mike told Jared the true story of his brother's early life. I met with Kyle alone to check on how he was doing with this powerful new knowledge. When I asked him if he had known the secret, he told me, I didn't know what it was, but I always knew they were keeping something from me. Children sense when there are secrets and often respond negatively to their confusion. Not surprisingly, Kyle wanted to meet his paternal grandparents. Though his mother was scared, she reached out to them and they responded with joy at the prospect of meeting their grandson. The family finished their work with two important rituals. When November came around again, Joan, Mike, and the boys visited Alan's grave openly, acknowledging his life and his death. A month later, at a celebratory party that included all the grandparents, Kyle and Mike readopted each other as father and son. Kyle's November madness disappeared, never to return. Some more of our Ask Peggy column. Question. My friend and her husband are Mr. and Mrs. PDA. They keep kissing and groping, making people, especially my kids, uneasy. Can I ask them to cool it? Here is Peggy's answer. Yes. When they visit your home, you can tell them politely that their constant contact makes you and the kids uncomfortable, and ask them to keep things G-rated. Be light and upbeat. Love is grand, but when you're here, could you please hold off? Thanks. When you're out in public with them, it wouldn't be appropriate to comment, but you can certainly limit your kids and your own exposure. Next question. Should you say something stuck? You're out to lunch with your boss and notices she has a speck of lettuce lodged in her teeth. Should you tell her? Here's Peggy's answer. Yes. It's awkward, but take a deep breath and do it. Wouldn't you want someone to alert you? Besides, otherwise she'll eventually see it herself and know that you didn't point it out. Quietly say, you've got a little green in your teeth, and I figured you wanted to know. Next question. My cube mate at work talks so loudly on the phone that I can't concentrate. How can I nicely ask her to tone it down? Here's Peggy's answer. It's all in how you deliver the message. You might want to wait until you're on the phone too. Then put your own call on hold and say, Jane, could you please lower your voice? I'm having a hard time hearing. If that doesn't work, you'll have to be more direct. Say, this cubicle setup is tough. I find it hard to concentrate because I can hear your phone conversations. Is it the same for you? We could try lowering our voices and see if that helps. The next step is use earplugs or see if you can transfer to another cubicle. Here are some general household tips from Good Housekeeping Magazine. My cast iron pan went rusty, so scour off the rust with a stiff nylon brush, hot water, and a little salt. Salt is a natural abrasive. If that doesn't work, go with hot water and steel wool. After drying, lightly coat the pan, inside and out, with vegetable oil, and place a top full upside down in the oven at 350 for 1 hour to re-season the pan. Allow to cool before using or storing. What to do with that window shade that won't roll up? Or maybe it won't come down. To repair, take it out of its bracket, unroll it in the whole way flat on the floor, then roll it up snugly halfway. Reinstall it and test it out. If it doesn't work, take it down and repeat the process. All right, what about those gunky tub mats? It may keep you from slipping, but the suction cups underneath are magnets for grime. You can clean the mat in the washer with detergent and bleach in a short, regular, warm, or hot cycle. Well, what if your couch sags, even when no one is on it? Here's the tip. Open the zipper in the seat cushions and add polyester fiberfill. You can get that at any craft store. The how-to? Fluff loose handfuls of stuffing into tufts and add a bit at times until the dent is filled. Are you embarrassed by the dingy dining room chair seats? Most fabric-covered seats unscrew from the frame and the upholstery is just stapled on. Pry out the staples with pliers, a flathead screwdriver can help get under them, and remove the old cloth, or skip this step if the material is too bulky or stained. Cut the new upholstery fabric to size, centering any pattern, and add 2 inches to the edges. Well, it looks like we're out of time for today's episode of Good Housekeeping Magazine. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long, until next time.